Welcome to Living with Dying, a podcast where we're going to talk about the unspeakable, everything to do with death and dying, and how to live with it. We're all on the same journey towards the end, but we just never talk about it. We don't like to think of our own life ending, and we certainly don't like to contemplate losing our nearest and dearest. So we all join in this huge conspiracy, pretending it won't happen to us. And then, when it does, we're often ill-prepared. So we're saying, let's talk about death. Let's open up the subject, and by listening to other people's stories, glean some advice and tips on how best to approach death, how to deal with loss, and how to rebuild a life after. So I'm here today talking with Tom Page, whose father died in the hospice. And Tom took up the offer of counselling after his father died. And I would like to explore that with you a bit later, Tom, if that's okay with you. I'd like to talk about how that helped. But can we begin by you just telling me a bit more about your father, what he was like and what your relationship was like?
Yeah, so my dad was Keith Page. He was born in Norwich, lived there till he was 18, then swanned off to university, went to Aston University, so up to Birmingham, met my mum up there, and then those two sort of been together ever since. So moved around variously. Civil engineer by trade, spent majority of his career at Canary Wharf. So any building at Canary Wharf, my dad was either in charge of being built or was part of the team that built it. With his last project he did was the Crossrail station at Canary Wharf. That was his last project he did before he passed away. So it's quite nice to have that as a place to go back to. So we've been there a few times as a family. Yeah, it's just a brilliant dad. I've got three brothers. I'm number three. So I've got two older, one younger, all completely different professions, different people. And I think that's probably a reflection of him and my mum, really, of how we've been brought up, that we're allowed to sort of be who we are. So I'm 32 and I think my parents would have moved to Berkshire probably 40 years ago. And the current house that they lived in, they moved into 30 years ago. So
you were brought up there?
I was brought up there. I think I had a brief stint at another house that I don't remember, but I was brought up there. My younger brother was brought up. Well, we all brought up there, but it's the only house I remember as home. And mum still lives in it now, which is brilliant for all of us. And we're all very local. Within reason.
And were you very close to your dad?
Yeah, I think we all were, which again is a testament to my parents. We all had sort of different bonds about different things. Mine was very much football. We're sort of avid Norwich City fans. So whilst my brothers had different connections, football was mine with my dad. So it was brilliant. So we get to go to the matches, talk about it. But yeah, all very close, so close. Actually, me and my young brother, we bought our first house together and it was a 15-minute walk from the family home. My eldest brother lives a 10-minute drive from the family home. Number two brother was a 10-minute drive and is now a 10-minute walk from the family home. I'm in Richmond at the moment, so I'm probably the furthest one away at 45 minutes. So I think it's just a reflection of how close we all were and still are now.
So tell me what happened to your father.
So dad passed away due to prostate cancer. He first had it when I was in year 7 or year 8. I think that means I was about 12 or 13, but I can't remember of the things. It was treated successfully then. He actually had his prostate removed at the time. It wasn't something I was super aware of because I was quite young. I think rightly my parents sort of protected us a little bit on that element, because I think when it first happened, there wasn't any effective risk to his life. So I think being a bit young, saying the word cancer might have not unbalanced us, but you'd automatically go through the right thing. So that happened, and then about 2000 and I think about 16, 17, it then came back. And I think at the time it came back, it was sort of said that this isn't going to be life. At the time, it wasn't life threatening, but it was sort of life shortening. So I think it was, my dad isn't going to live to 90, sort of thing. And then it progressed and progressed, went through various treatments, chemotherapy, radiotherapy. And then I think even during, so he died September 2019, but I think even it wasn't probably until the late summer that we sort of noticed actually is getting ill. And even when he went into hospital, I think maybe naively we all thought, oh, it's just a side effect sort of thing of everything that was going on. But actually it wasn't. It was effectively his body giving up, really. So it spread to his liver. That was sort of the main area it spread to. And then I just think, his body effectively was just too much over too long a period of time.
So it sounds as if you were all a bit shaken up by what happened because you expected initially that it wasn't...
Yeah, I think you always have that hope. And yeah, I did. Look, my mum and dad might have known the real details of it, might not have done. But yeah, we weren't really, I don't think I really was aware of what was happening until he was actually admitted to hospital. We were very lucky. Dad's work, he had private healthcare. So we're very lucky that we were able to, the hospital he was admitted to was a private hospital in London. Which it was just amazing. And yeah, I think when he was in there and it's sort of the discussions we were having with doctors, it's sort of, yeah, within a couple of 2-3 days of him being there, you sort of understand then by the conversations that are being had, the people that are coming in to see. And then we sort of were told, right, we need to start thinking of palliative care people came in, and that's when we sort of started thinking, well, that's when it clicked with me, right, this is not necessarily it, but we're going towards the passing now.
How old were you then?
I would have been 28. Yeah, 2019, I was born in 1991, yeah, 28. Yeah.
Were you and your brothers talking about this, or were you each in your own little individual space?
I think we were all, when we were in hospital, we were talking about it because we were there. Obviously, four boys, mum was there every day. I was there nearly every day. Brothers would pop in, pop out, various commitments. So yeah, we were talking about it. I think you get a bit caught up with the fact that he's in hospital, that your focus is on him. But I think there were points that we did say to each other, look, this is happening now, sort of thing. I don't think it's ever anything you can accept, to be honest. I don't think it's even something you believe. I'd probably say even today, 4 years over, do I believe my dad's passed away? Probably the answer is no. But I think that's just part of it. You never accept what's happened. You just learn to live with it. So yeah, it was very, very hard at the time.
Can you remember the feelings you had at that time?
I remember, so me and my mum would drive up when he first got admitted, because we still weren't really sure what was going on. My mum wasn't staying overnight there, so we'd drive up in the morning. So I remember them basically saying to me and my mum, right, we need to start thinking about XYZ. And I had to take something down to the car. And I remember just sitting in the car and bursting into tears. I think that was when it was like, right, this is happening. So I think it's just helplessness, isn't it? And you always know someone, everyone's going to die. Every single person, I'm going to die one day. But I think you just assume your parents are going to live forever. I think so. Yeah, it was hard. I think just the realization was the hardest part, and thinking, right, what is the future now, sort of thing.
It sounds as if you removed yourself from the hospital and for your mother before you could let the tears come.
Yeah, I tried my best to not to get upset badly in front of mum. I don't really know why. Everyone felt exactly the same, but I think you just want to try and, when you're in that room, you want to try and keep some positivity and some joy is the wrong word, but if everyone sat there crying, and then dad's still there. Dad's going through this all as well. He knows what's going on at this point. He knew what was going on. So it's, I think people just did take themselves out to have that moment. The word, I think release is probably a good word. A release and a reset, and then you can come back in and go, right, let's day at a time, keep going sort of thing.
It is fascinating, all this, isn't it? We do seem to think we have to keep on going for each other and for the person who's dying. And we're not necessarily totally honest and open with each other or with the person who's dying, are we? But we kind of feel we're doing it in their interest.
I know we'll come on to it later, when I had counselling, the one thing that I've still to this day I've always remembered is the counsellor saying to me to talk about what's happened because no one can feel any worse. And it was after she said that to me, it made me really actually think, you're right. No one in that room, my dad, my brothers, any of my family, could feel any worse than what they currently felt. So it was quite, that was a really moment when they said that. It made me actually, makes you think and, think about everything.
Did that leave you with the regret then?
No, I've got absolutely no regrets. That's the one thing I've got with dad's passing, because of the situation, what happened. He was, when he was in hospital, he was still dad. He was him. We managed to have the conversations that we wanted to have. We all did, all my brothers and my mum. So I think I don't have any regrets on that element. And I think I'm extremely fortunate that I was in the position. I don't have any regret. I don't wish I'd said anything like that, so I managed to say it all. Because there's unfortunately a lot people don't get the opportunity to say goodbye. So I think that's really helped.
And when you were doing it, he was able to join in the conversation?
Oh, yeah. He was fully, he knew everything we were talking about. I'm in finance. We're talking about, right, this is where all the bank, this is where the bank accounts are. This is what you need to do and that sort of thing. So fully, it was still dad. Like, it was fully normal, I would say, normal. So yeah, able to have the conversations, the ones about that, and then the ones about the thank yous and everything like that. So no, it was nice, if it can be nice, sort of thing.
So you got to say thank you for being a great dad.
Yeah. I think we all did. So that, I think that's really helped a lot of us. As I said, we're extremely lucky that even though the situation is awful, this is going to sound like the most strangest comment, but it couldn't have not gone any better, because clearly it could have done. But we just got the time with him as him before he sort of, he didn't really fade until only probably 2-3 days before he passed away. So actually I think we all got that opportunity, which has, I think, really helped us all.
Now stop me if this feels intrusive, but trying to put myself in your shoes, really. I mean, you say it was good and you were glad to have it, but it must have been heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, you're saying goodbye to your dad, aren't you? So, yeah, it completely destroyed everyone, I think. But I got to say it. I think, would I be where I am now along my grief journey if I hadn't had the opportunity to say that? I don't know, but I can't imagine I would be on a positive train. Rather, I think it could have gone very different if I'd not had, for me personally, if I'd not had the opportunity.
So perhaps the time has come now for you to tell me how the bereavement counselling helped. You obviously had to organise the funeral and all those things, but I guess you had time to prepare for that as well.
Yeah, so I was very lucky. My employer at the time were brilliant, and they effectively said to me, come keep us updated, but come back when you're ready. So yeah, we did the funeral, organised that, all which was all of us at the funeral directors, me, my brothers, my mum. So it meant that it was actually how we wanted to do it, how we think Dad wanted to do it.
And had he left details?
He hadn't left details. He'd said a few things. I think he didn't want to get buried. He wanted to get cremated, so we did that. And I think that was about it. There may have been some certain things, but I don't really remember. But it was, yeah, it was very much a celebration. Like, the song he came into was Brown Sugar, Rolling Stones. We had Dancing Queen when either we were walking out or everyone was coming in to sit down. So it was very much Dad and how everyone remembered him, which was brilliant. But yeah, so that then Mum and Dad had been involved with the hospice. Obviously, hospice came out and cared for Dad when we got him home. So that was, I believe, my mum and my dad had counselling on the build-up to Dad passing away. So it was brought up whether we would. And I sort of took the opportunity that I've got to give myself the best opportunity here to try and work my way along from this. And I basically just told my brothers, you're all doing it as well. We're all doing this. We've all got to give ourselves all the best opportunity to do it. Whether you go for one session, hate it, or you're there for 100 sessions. So I was quite adamant with them and basically told them to do it, which was good. Yeah, I think a couple of them maybe didn't think it was right for them, but I'm glad they went.
And how long after your father died did you embark on that?
I reckon it was probably a couple of months afterwards I had my first session, which would have been at the old hospice before they moved over here.
So you had a couple of months of feeling pretty low.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have low days. You have days that aren't low. It's, yeah. I would never say I don't think I was ever at a rock bottom period for a prolonged period of time. I think I've one of the sayings I always say is grief isn't like you see it on the telly. Some people it is, but I assume that, right, I'm going to be waking up surrounded by bottles of beer in the morning with my girlfriend, who's now my wife, saying, what are you doing? And she actually said she thought that was going to happen, but it never happened. I think because we have each other, I've got my mum, got three brothers, you almost didn't really have, not have time, but we kept it all as a positive environment sort of thing. So I don't think we allowed each other to get really low because we all knew what we were all going through. So I think we all were like quite active to say, right, we're not going to let you hit rock bottom and stay there. Everyone's going to hit rock bottom. It's making sure you can come back up from it, which was the key thing.
So you were all there for each other, kind of monitoring each
other. And I think actually it's made us, we were close anyway, but it's made us even closer, like even closer, which has been one of the great things that's come out of a horrendously awful situation that I've never spoke to my mum as much as I do now. Same with my brothers.
So it's brought you closer. But it's terrible, isn't it, that we have to have these tragedies in life to do things like that?
Yeah, it is. I mean, as I said, we were lucky. We were close before. I think we're close as a family. But it has made us even closer, which I guess is a way of seeing a positive out of a tragedy, really. And I think they've all said the same. My brother got married last year, said the same in his speech that it brought us all closer. I got married this year and said the same thing as well. So I think we all know.
So two weddings without your dad being able to be there, that would have been difficult.
Yeah, I think it's been the first, other than a couple of Norwich City promotions, it's been the first real moment that I've had that my dad wasn't there. And we did lots on the day to have him involved, but it's not the same. I think that was the hardest. That's the most challenging thing I've had since Dad passed away, I think. Since obviously the initial 6 months, etc. after. Now living with Dad not being here, I think that's by far the hardest thing I've had to go through.
that's one of the big problems with loss, isn't it? It doesn't get easier because it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It may get easier. You may learn to incorporate it in your life, but it's never not there.
No, it's a box, isn't it? And it's in this box. And sometimes the box is a small box for the day. Sometimes the box is like the size of a skip. But it's always, yeah, it's always that he's not coming back. And there are things that, yeah, happen and you think, oh, it'd be great if Dad was there. Just to even help or to tell or to that sort of thing. I think, yeah, the wedding was, it was tough. But yeah, we made, my wife especially made such an effort with tiny little things to make sure he was involved and there. And I think because everyone, I'm very vocal about my, I don't, what am I trying to say? I discuss him a lot, all my friends and stuff like that. So they all, there were very few people in that were going there that didn't know my dad passed away. So they noticed the things as well, which was really nice sort of thing.
And you talked about, you sort of glossed over two Norwich City promotions. How did you handle those? Did you go to the matches on your own?
So I've only been to a match on my own once. And that's just because no car, but I usually go with my brothers. So they always came anyway. But it's always been my dad. But what's quite interesting is 4 days after Dad died, we played Manchester City, the big, who are at that time were and did win the league that season. Norwich had horrendous injuries. Everyone's expecting us to win 5-6-0, and we won 3-2. And I've always remembered Dad's, his phone was still, it was still there, and he got a text from his old work colleague to say that that was like for you sort of thing. Like, that's the reason they won. And I'll always remember that text, which is really nice.
That was moving.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I ended up crying at the end of the game because, and it was on TV. So look, my mum was there, my brothers were there. So it was quite a surreal moment that that happened. And I think we all knew why, which was nice.
Oh, that's brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah, well, tears to mine as well.
Well, let's get on now to the counselling, because I know you feel that it's been a great help. Can you plot a course? Can you remember how you felt at the beginning and how it helped along the way?
I think going in, I didn't really know what to expect. Although I was championing it to my brothers, I was a bit like, will it actually help? And I think one of the big things I got from it was the initial conversation, actually, A, speaking about it without anyone directly related to it in the room, and just being told, like, oh, you do know that is you're meant to feel this way. I think having that first session and being told that really helped me to be like an onion, peel back the layers, because I could then explore things a bit deeper, like what are my worries, what are about X, what about the future and things like that. And I think, yeah, but just being told, when I explained, like, obviously, I just don't really know what the future's going to hold and miss him every day. Just someone to say, who's completely unrelated, you know, it's okay to feel like that, I think was a big like weight lifted off my shoulders sort of thing.
So it normalised it.
Yeah, you. Because you, I guess in theory, you worry, oh, is this person who's trained to be a counsellor going to not judge me, but say, oh, no, you shouldn't think like that, or that sort of thing. And just to simply be told, you know, it's okay to feel like that, was, yeah, normalized it.
However you feel,
which was, yeah, really, it was good to hear. And I think that just helped for my future sessions to be able to explore, like, what am I worried about in the future, who am I worried about now, and that sort of thing. Just helped to normalize it's actually a really good word, I think.
How many sessions did you have, do you remember?
I'm going to say about 5. It might have been a little less or a little more. I can't remember specifically. But enough that I felt, I think I've, at that period, sort of healed. It's not the right word either. I know I keep saying it, that's not the right word. But
there isn't the right word, is there?
I felt I was, I'd had the tools to get ready now for the next step of my journey, which doesn't end.
Can you remember those tools to this day?
First one, as I mentioned earlier, no one is going to feel worse than they do right now. And I think you can still use this. Oh, 4 years after, I think I can still use that saying, still is true. Like, bringing him up isn't going to make anyone more upset than they already are. Like, you can't get any more upset. You can't feel any worse because of losing someone. You individually can't feel any worse than you do. And that, like, can't get any worse. So that was one of the key things. I think realizing that this isn't going away. Like, the day I stop grieving will be the day that I die, sort of thing. Like, it's not just gonna, yes, some days I might not think of Dad. And that I'm at that stage now that there is a day that goes past that sometimes I don't think of Dad. And that was my biggest fear, is forgetting him. But you can't. I don't know. I think it's actually impossible to forget him. So I think that element of it, that as well, knowing that actually there is, from going from thinking about him every minute to then every hour, to then every few hours, to then then four times a day, then three times a day, then going towards that. And it's not wrong to understand. It's not wrong to not have to not think about the person you've lost every minute of every day. It doesn't make you miss them any less. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and it doesn't make you miss them any less by not thinking about them, and it's not going to change anything. But you don't feel guilty if it go, oh God, I haven't thought about Dad this hour, that sort of thing. And I think that's really helped, to know that there's going to be stages I'm going to think about him loads, and then maybe stages or days that maybe he doesn't come into my mind. But that might just. But then it's also nice. You may not have thought about him, then something on the news or a conversation with someone else, and then it brings up a nice memory. So it's quite nice to get that feeling that, oh, I haven't thought about him for a day or so. Then you get to think about him, you get the nice feeling of thinking about him.
So would you say you're getting more nice memories now than sad memories?
I think there's now... There's obviously elements of the sadness, the life. As I said, had my wedding 3 months ago. Obviously, happiest day of my life, but an underlying sadness. So there's the life events. My younger brother's expected to have a baby next year with his wife. That's obviously another amazing life event, but there's going to be, even for me, and it's not my child, there's going to be that element of, Dad's not here to see it. But then you get the nice elements of being on the tube, seeing Canary Wharf Station, seeing the station, Canary Wharf, seeing that, well, I work in London now, like the Jubilee line, which has got Canary Wharf on it. I always think, oh, I see a Jubilee line, oh, I think of Dad. See the DLR, oh, I think of Dad's been in that. It's like, I think you always got the sad feelings, but it's also nice now to have a lot of the nice, the positive thoughts that, oh, reminds me of Dad, sort of thing, rather than bursting into tears when I see something.
I was just going to say, you seem like a very positive person to me. Have you always been like that?
No, I think what's happened is I've always been a happy-go-lucky person, but I've had my own challenges over the years. But I think losing Dad has really switched my mentality, because the work... As of right now today, the worst thing has happened to me. I'm sure other people, a lot of worse things might happen to them or has happened. So it means now that certain things that happens, I don't get the lowness or the upset. I've gone through the worst thing that's happened to me, and this isn't anything like it. So don't get upset.
So it's put things in perspective.
Oh, yeah, I think that's the right term. I think that's what I was trying to get around to. Yeah, it's put things in perspective. So when stuff happens, everything can be put in perspective now.
I noticed during the earlier course of our conversation, you mentioned two symbolic, I suppose, metaphors, really. You talked about peeling away the layers of an onion.
Mm.
And you talked about putting your grief in different size boxes. Did you get those skills from your counselling? Or had you thought of all those things yourself?
I think the onion thing sort of happened. The onion wasn't mentioned, but it's sort of, I think cancelling naturally does peel you back to a layer at a time. And I think the box, maybe I've seen it somewhere, but I've always tried to work out how you could describe grief to someone, because it's not the same every day. It's not the same as it was a year ago. It might be completely different in 10 years' time. So I've sort of got this, it's in a box metaphor, that sometimes the box is really big and in front of you, and sometimes the box is quite small on a shelf. So I think, yeah, I think I must have read that. That's way too smart for me to come up myself. So I must have heard it or read it somewhere. But that, I think, is quite a nice way to explain it to people.
It is. I haven't heard it before, and I can see myself finding that very helpful, to think about it like that from time to time. It's not always the same.
Yeah.
It's never the same, in fact, is it?
It's never the same every day, and everyone's grief is different. But I think the idea of a box is quite nice, because sometimes you can open the box and look in and have a bit of grief, and sometimes you can go, I'm having a good day today, and close the box, put it on the shelf. But it's always there. It's never going away. But I don't think that's a bad thing.
What lessons have you learned about being around other people during this time? I mean, you've talked a lot about talking about your dad and wanting other people to, and I keep saying in this podcast that that's something that keeps cropping up. We're all aware of people who don't mention the person's name ever again, and that seems horrendous to me. I always want to keep talking about my husband. So have you got tips that you'd suggest for people around those who are going through grief as to what they can do and say?
Well, if I was to tell you my closest home friends, say, I think there's about a group of eight of us, five of us have lost a parent, and it's not really talked about that much. And they've lost it at different stages of their lives, but they're all similar age to me. So it's happened either when they're young, similar age to me at the time. And yeah, I think people don't like to talk about it because, A, maybe they're not happy to talk about it, which is totally fine. There's no right or wrong way. I realise that I'm maybe at one end of a spectrum, because of the fact I'm happy to talk about it. Some people don't want to talk about it, and that's totally up to them. But you should never, I don't think you should ever tell someone how to grieve or how to deal with grief, because it's totally up to them. But I think talking about it does help. It's okay to mention someone who's not here. Yes, it's not easy at the start, but it does get easier. I like to think I talk about my dad as if he was still here. Like, I still refer to my parents' house. It's not my mum's house, it's my parents' house. Because that's what it is. And I think if people, obviously on their own routes, their own pathways, if they can somehow get to a point and they can start talking a bit more about someone who they've lost, then I think it will help. Might not, they might do it and go, oh, this is awful. But I think it's worth giving it a go.
And did your other brothers get the same benefit from the counselling that you did?
Yeah, I think so. Again, I think everyone's completely different. They're completely different people to me. But I think it benefited everyone. No one said it didn't. Whether they're lying to me to stop pestering them about it. But yeah, I think I don't see how it could make it worse. It's already it's as bad as it can get. Why? I think it'd be hard pushed to speak to a counsellor and come out in a worse place, is my opinion.
Tom, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be having more chats in future episodes about everything to do with death and dying, such as how to prepare for it, what it's really like when someone dies, how to talk about it, what kind of plans to make, how different cultures and faiths approach dying and bereavement, lots more around grief and loss, how to support others in their sadness, and my personal hobby horse, how to rebuild a life, a good life, after the loss of someone special. If you'd like to join us to talk about the death of someone near to you, if this episode has resonated with you and you have a story to share, or if you've been affected by some of the issues raised, please do get in touch at hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.